Well, Senator Anderson, I want to thank you for being with us. We'll certainly continue this conversation. President Obama meets with Richard Trumka and Mary Kay Henry of SEIU and AFL-CIO today. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll link to your report. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is a listener-supported grassroots global news hour. You make it possible when you donate at democracynow.org. Thank you so much.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB. It's 1 minute after 6 o'clock. Time for Off the Wall. We'll be right back. And the very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined by Kyle in Seattle.
Hi.
How you doing? Your levels are just fine. Wow, it's really working good tonight.
Cool.
I'd like to talk about two things tonight, if at all possible, on the show. One, of course, being the aftermath of Sandy, which continues, and two, being the historic election that just took place. And, you know, sometimes I think it's a conspiracy to keep me from talking about things for as long as possible, because the election was a week ago today, and, you know, I really want to talk about it the day after, but, of course, I'm not on the radio, and I've been preempted like crazy on the other radio station, so this is the first opportunity I've had to talk about the election almost as long as possible. But that's okay. That's okay. We'll get to it. But the storm, let's update people on where that stands. 15 days after we were hit by Sandy, most everybody has got their power back, but not everybody. In fact, I know people that just yesterday got their power back over in St. James. And that's right next to Stony Brook. So you can imagine how hard things were hit. Of course, Stony Brook survived just fine. We had power the whole time. But many other areas around us were really hit hard. Massive trees coming down. And, of course, on the South Shore, massive flooding. And that doesn't even get into Staten Island and the Jersey Shore and all the other places that that Sandy had an effect. They say Sandy will have had an effect on half the states in the United States at some point. I think it was 24 states, but that's only one away from 25, which is half. I think something like 60 million people were affected one way or another, which it dwarfs Katrina. Katrina only had 15 million people affected, so it's four times the amount of people affected. Obviously not as deadly a storm. Only just over 100 people so far have died as a result of Sandy, and of course, well over 1,000 died as a result of Katrina. But you know, it's not a question of comparing those kinds of grim statistics. It's what we do afterwards, how we pick ourselves up, and what we learn from the whole thing. And you know, Kyle, it's interesting. It's a interesting experience. I mean, you had a little bit of it last year with the other hurricane that we had, Hurricane Irene. It's Irene, right?
Irene.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. I forget. You know, you learn a lot about how to survive. You learn a lot about your fellow people, and just how quickly things can spiral out of control. Now, obviously, we all expected we were going to lose power at some point because of 90-mile-an-hour winds tend to do that. And when you have all your power lines up in the trees, that kind of thing can easily go down, very easily sometimes. So that was something that, you know, we were kind of prepared for. They said 7 to 10 days or more. That was the robocall that I got from the power company saying that you can expect your power to go out. What we didn't expect was for things to get as cold as they did, as quickly as they did. So shortly after this storm happened, temperatures started flirting with the freezing level. And that of course, made things very difficult for those of us who didn't have heaters that weren't controlled by electric. So, you know, you also learn how to make time go by when you don't have things like television, computers, internet, things like that. You basically you start the day with the sun and you end the day when the sun goes down, just like I guess we've done for centuries. The thing that also I think a lot of people didn't see coming was the gas panic. And that was kind of strange how that all came about. Obviously, some refineries were affected by the storm, and a lot of gas stations lost power, so they couldn't pump gas. But there was plenty to go around. The problem happened when people began to panic and think that there wasn't going to be enough, and they brought their Escalades and Broncos and whatever else, the massive tank vehicles that they own, and were filling them up at every possible opportunity, getting every single bottle and can they could find to hold gasoline for whatever, for their generators, for their massive vehicles, for breakfast, I don't know, whatever it is they wanted gasoline for. And that just sort of had a snowball effect, and people were literally camped out overnight. I would pass gas lines that went on for a mile of people with their lights off that were in their cars, could not have been more uncomfortable. Basically, there's no way they could have been more uncomfortable at their homes with no electricity than they were sitting in a car overnight waiting to fill up. And, you know, I became a victim of this, too. At some point, I said to myself, you know, if gasoline is going to be this hard to get, I'm just going to act like I don't have a car. And I did. I was walking around going places, and it wasn't so bad. But then, you know, at some point, I kind of got pulled into it. I got pulled into the allure that, okay, maybe now I could get gas if I moved fast. And I think, Kyle, I had you on the phone at one point. We were checking that Gas Buddy website that everybody all of a sudden was looking at to find out the latest news on what gas stations were open, which ones had gas, what the gas looked like, et cetera, et cetera. And I think it was either through that or through some other rumor, and there were a lot of rumors going around. People were whispering amongst each other, what did you hear? Where's the gas? Who's got it this week? And what's the latest thing out of Albany? You know, what are people saying? We heard that this particular station that just got a delivery or had recently gotten a delivery. And what did we do? We called the guy? We called the guy at the gas station?
Yeah, you had called me, and then I was able to conference over and make a call to the station, and then you were able to speak with them through that connection and get information about how much fuel they had. But it didn't really help in the end because when you got there,
wait, don't cut
before you were about to fill
hold
up.
Hold on,
right?
Kyle, you spoiled the whole story. I mean, don't go to the end.
I moved the whole story right along. That's exactly what happened, and it was frustrating.
Well, yeah, but I wanted to get into the whole thing about how there was a blizzard. You know, you skipped over the blizzard.
Oh yeah, that's right. It was snowing. Well, I wasn't there. I didn't really feel the impact of the snow, but yeah, it was starting to snow, and you were sitting there online. And I was with you on the phone as for good luck, right?
Well,
I was there,
yeah,
talking to you.
Let's also just recount the conversation we had with the guy. He said, oh, yes, we have plenty of gas. The line's not too long, and it's going to last all night.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, he didn't say all. Well.
He implied it, all right? He implied it was going to be there for a long time. So
very confident that they had just accepted a delivery.
It was close by, so I figured, okay, you know what? I'm in a warm house. This was the day that I got power back. I think it must have been last Wednesday, because a week ago during this radio program, I had men from Indiana in the forest. I remember talking about that. Unfortunately, they didn't finish the job that night, and apparently they don't work through the night, so they came back the next morning, and I think I was on the phone with you then, too, and I realized, oh, my God, I have power. The cable box says hold on it, because that's what they say when they reboot the cable box. It says hold. In fact, it would say hold for the next 2 days because the cable wire was split someplace. But, yeah, so I'd just gotten power back that day, and, you know, the house basically took the entire day to get warm again. A week ago tonight, my house went down to 5 degrees Celsius inside. That's how cold it was getting outside. And the second nor'easter was hitting us on that Wednesday, so the temperature was going to go down even more. So I was very happy that I had my power back and that I had the heat back. So, you know, I was kind of hesitant to jump out into this what turned into a snowstorm just to get gas. But I had bought into this whole thing enough so that I said to myself, well, if the prospects are that good, I guess it's worth the risk. And keep in mind, my car had almost no fumes left in it. From the last time, or the first time I waited on a gas line, only to find out the station never had gas in the first place, I had used up so much gas in that process that I had very, very little. So I was very concerned when I got on the line this time. And, okay, now you can pick up the story where you jumped ahead to.
Well, yeah, anyway, you were one car away, and they just started sort of casually put a cone out, and you were unable to get the fuel from there.
It's
so
interesting how
basically wantonly gone out into the cold, into a impending storm to get, you know, a snowstorm to get fuel from this local station, which promptly denied you as soon as you, after you sat in their nice long line. And in retrospect, we ought to have maybe asked him, inquired about, well, okay, so you've just gotten a delivery. How long is your line? You know, that might have been a good question.
Well, didn't I ask, is it a very long line? And I think you implied that it wasn't a very long line or something along those lines.
Come on, in the moment, I mean, this was a stressy situation. You hadn't been to a working fuel station in, what, a week or two?
Well, I still knew how they worked, and it just wasn't right, you know? And let me just correct you on something, too. Somehow the story got changed where it turned into a cone that was blocking me. No, it was a cop that was blocking me. It was a big policeman in a car with flashing lights. And the way they closed the line was they just moved the cop car in front of the driveway to the gas station. And, you know, you can't really push aside a cop car with your car without it turning into a bigger incident. So that's just a message. I mean, it was a blizzard, so he wasn't getting out of his car, and I didn't know what to do. I didn't even know if I would make it back with the amount of gas I had used in this latest fruitless endeavor. In any event, it worked out the next day. I had help from some friends who lent me gas in cans to put in the car so I had enough to get to the gas station to get gas, and I was able to fill up, and a day or so after that, they instituted even odd rationing, which basically means the last number of your plate indicates what day you can get gas. And literally overnight, it all stopped. It all disappeared. And it was like normal again. I don't know if it was because of the rationing or because people just calmed down or the supplies suddenly became more plentiful. But what I learned from that was that it all can fall apart so incredibly quickly. Now, keep in mind, we had power. We had access to food. We had everything around. Most people, in fact, had power in their homes at this point. But there was still panic going on because of that one thing of gasoline supposedly being in short supply, when it really wasn't. And I just wonder if there had been so many other things that were in short supplies, more basic things like food and clean water, things like that. How quickly would society have fallen apart at that stage? You know, it really makes you think.
Yeah, or services. I mean, if there weren't enough hospitals or emergency responders for whatever reason were around, people that were flown in to do electrical work, what if they weren't there? I mean, would it be like 3 months of no power or something?
Well, you know, some people are feeling like it will be 3 months without power because LIPA has not restored power to everybody, particularly people in places like Oceanside, and it's extremely frustrating. Obviously, it's very frustrating when you don't have your power back, and other people do. You feel like you've been forgotten, and it's hard to be patient. It's hard to realize that those guys out there are working their asses off. And that if there are any problems, it's undoubtedly with management. And I don't want to make that my mantra, but basically any time I notice problems, it's not with the people that are doing the job, it's the people that are planning it, are coordinating the whole thing from behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Actually, as of this broadcast, LIPA and their contractor, National Grid, they're under fire, like, big time.
Oh, I know. Yes.
People are really upset at them, and it's going to, like, the state level and nationally. I mean, they're under a lot of scrutiny for this and their response, and it's not positive.
No, here's a quote from Newsday. LIPA's critically important power outage management system, which helps direct the recovery response, operates, and you'll like this, Kyle, on a 25-year-old mainframe computer that was cited as one of the biggest shortcomings in the utility's response to Tropical Storm Irene in August of last year. They run that on a mainframe. They neglected basic maintenance to prevent outages, such as replacing rotting poles and trimming trees around power lines. There are a lot of ways they dropped the ball, and it's becoming very, very clear now. But I think the biggest way they dropped the ball was not being able to communicate effectively between the customers to let them know exactly how things stood. You'd go online, look at your neighborhood to see if something was being taken care of, and there was no report of an outage. You'd call up to report an outage, and the computer would take your information. Then you'd call up again, say the next day or 2 days from then, and it would act like you had never filed it the first time. So you never knew, do they have this information or not, because the system just wasn't equipped to tell you that.
So the robocaller or the robocall thing has amnesia and isn't quite as personable as you like.
Yeah, well, that's not the robocall thing calls out. This is the automated attendant, but there are two of those. One is a male voice, one is a female voice, and they have totally different software, and they tell you different things. Some act like you've never reported before. Others tell you that you have. It just gave the impression that they really don't know what they're doing.
Well, there's got to be a much better way to do that, and I think that's coming along with like what Governor Cuomo is calling for as far as reinvestment and the things that they want to upgrade. And one of those things, I think, is having LIPA and these kinds of power distribution companies install things like smart grids and that sort of thing, like replacing that mainframe so that when customers report things that, you know, resources get allocated to the areas that need them the most and much quicker, more efficiently, or at least if you're not going to be able to do that, communicate it to the people that are suffering out there.
Absolutely. They say, I'm looking at a Newsday piece here, and they claim that engineers were using highlighters and paper maps to track thousands of outages instead of, more modern equipment that could be updated instantly. And they were doing this as ratepayers banged in frustration on the building's locked front doors. I wonder if that's just being illustrative or if they actually were doing that. I know there were demonstrations last weekend, anti-LIPA demonstrations. It was getting pretty pretty tense.
Well, they do take your money.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Oh, absolutely.
Customer is always right.
You okay there? You dropped the phone?
No, I'm recycling something, and I almost dropped the phone as I was getting up to do that.
Oh, okay. Don't drop the phone. So there's that. And, hopefully most of our listeners have power back. It's getting cold again, and this kind of thing really is more than a lot of people can bear. And that's, that's why it's important to have connections. That's why my landline was a real lifeline for me, because I was able to talk to people, even though half the time it didn't work properly. I couldn't get outgoing circuits. But those times when I was able to communicate, it was very helpful. Because literally the only things that you have in a situation like that are a phone, a radio, and a flashlight. Not much else. And that's how I would begin and end every day, waiting for power to come back on and trying to fill days by doing other things. And it would take all day. This was the day that I got gas. That's how I would define something. Or this was the day that I got online because I walked to a Starbucks and hung out there for 7 hours. It's basically, when you don't have power, it doesn't matter anymore that it takes you an hour to walk to a store. Because you want to use that time, because what else are you going to do? You're going to sit around and wait for the power to come back on, and it's not going to come on for another 10 days. So it sort of changes the whole pace of your entire life, which is not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing, but sometimes you get a little frustrated thinking that it's never going to go back to the way it was.
Hey, E.
Yes, Kyle.
Were you able to read any books or do anything like that, or is it just impossible? I mean, you didn't have any, like, LED lamps where you could, like, get a blanket and, like, actually do some old-school things, like turn some pages and stuff?
Yeah, well, not necessarily pages, but one of the things that actually did come through for me big time was the Kindle.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, because I was able to, sometimes I don't normally get a cell phone signal at all, but sometimes one drifts in. And this is in the best of times. And imagine after a hurricane.
Right.
I went to the Kindle store, and I was trying to buy the current editions of the various newspapers, New York Times, Newsday, so I could get information that way. I had the radio. I was able to listen to the news radio station. But being able to read something is also very comforting.
Yep.
So basically, I'd be holding the Kindle out the window, hoping it would pick up a 3G signal and complete my purchase. And it would take about a half hour for it to come through, but it did in the end. I was so happy that the newspaper got delivered to me on the Kindle. And the battery lasted forever, so I was able to read that. I have a little light attached to it as well, so I can read in the dark.
Yeah.
So that was that was extremely comforting. Reading became very, very important. And, I couldn't turn pages because it was so cold, but the Kindle worked just fine.
Awesome. I remember I kept asking you to do things like, get ready and, you know, build a fire or light a candle. I kept doing it, wanting
probably
to do it.
Build a fire in the
like,
middle.
No, that's not the right thing to do.
Yeah.
I imagine I'm hearing you like just trying to survive out there, and I was very worried. You know, I kept talking and hearing just the situation and how things were being delayed and getting, you know, it was very, very cold and all of these things going on when you don't have power.
It would have been a lot easier, Kyle, if you didn't keep making hot chocolate and telling me about it. You know?
Oh, I know. It wasn't that brutal. I think I was, like, cooking up a storm. And,
you
like,
were. Oh, you were.
All about all the wonderful things I was doing. Actually, at a certain point, we were talking so much that I started to not tell you certain things. It's kind of like when the astronauts are up there, you know, ground control, that, you know, Houston does not want them to know about, you know, geopolitics or who's doing what or this or that.
Well, that you're actually on a trajectory to Saturn now.
Checking myself, making sure not to talk about all the things I was doing with electricity and how enjoyable it was and that sort of thing. But I did a lot of listening and was able to at least stay abreast of the news and relay things and maybe even patch some calls as we talked about.
Well, that's the thing. You get starved for information, and the conversations you have with people basically turn into that. What have you heard? You know, what's the latest? And just information becomes so valuable.
Yep.
And if somebody has the ability to hear a different news source or speak directly to somebody, that becomes big news. I remember after 9/11 happened in New York City, there would be crowds of people gathered around cars that had radios turned on. Because that is how people were getting information. Everything else was down. So if you found a car that had a radio that you could hear, that was how you found out what was going on. So, you know, we very quickly adjust ourselves so that we get our information in that particular way. But, you know, I do want to say one thing. I'm talking about how things started to fall apart and devolve. I have to say, though, that people really did take care of each other, at least from what I could see around me. And what I've heard from other people as well. Now, you know, you hear in the newspapers, you probably heard this, Kyle, that there's cases of looting and cases of people getting into fights on gas lines. And, you know, I don't doubt that that happened in an isolated number of cases. I'm sure that happens every day, no matter what. But it was minimal. It really was minimal. What I saw were people genuinely taking care of each other, looking out for each other. Of course, there are going to be exceptions to that, but let's not lose track of the fact that we're bigger than that. And there's, you want to make sure that people make it through okay. I've been going around to local merchants over the last week or so, checking in, making sure that they survived the storm, how badly they were hit. Everybody was hit in one way or another, whether you lost a week's worth of business, which can be catastrophic, or the roof came off your building, you know, whatever. It's important, though, to check in and see how people made out and help out whenever you can. And I've seen no lack of that, which I'm very happy to be able to say.
Great.
And the question,
communicating.
Yeah, communicating is a big deal.
Yeah,
that's what it's all about.
Lending a hand where you can.
Mm-hmm.
Thing.
So now they're talking about possibly retiring the name of Sandy, which I think is a no-brainer. So they don't decide that until next spring, though. So if you're wondering if this particular hurricane name will be retired, they usually retire ones that that have devastating effects, such as Irene was retired. Did you know that the hurricane we went through last year was retired, Irene. Then Charlie 2004, Dennis 2005, Dean 2007. I don't remember Dean. Of course, Katrina, a lot of them. A lot of them have been retired, so I think Sandy was. They'll definitely be retired.
Dean, he was a candidate for president.
Yeah, but he was also a hurricane. He also, he was multifaceted. I guess that's as good a way as any to seg into the other part of our discussion tonight, which is the election that took place a week ago tonight. And, you know, it took me a couple of days, Kyle, to realize this, but this was a really good election. This was pivotal. In fact, what I'd like to say is 2008 was Obama's election, but I think 2012 was the people's election. And you know what I mean by that is so many things happened that were steps forward that indicate that people have changed the way they think about certain things, that society is moving in a different direction, and I don't think we're going to be the same again. I think these are all positive steps, and it's not based on one particular person. It's based on us. You know, we voted for certain things. Now, your state...
It's a very positive step for Afghanistan to have these elections and people to vote. I'm very weary of, Hamid Karzai, but...
I'm weary of him. But let me talk about your state, Kyle, Washington.
Oh, you're talking about American elections.
I'm talking about it, yeah. What gave it away?
No, they do that in other parts of the world, too, you know.
Yeah, they stick your finger in paint and all that, too.
Yeah.
So now, in Washington, there were two historic referendums, and they both passed. Do you want to tell us about those a little bit?
Sure. One was 502, and the other one was 74.
I was hoping maybe you could give a little bit more detail.
One was a referendum, one was an initiative. I don't know what... They're just things on the ballot, or referendums, initiatives, whatever they are. 74 was the marriage equality proposition or initiative or referendum or whatever the heck it was.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it was upholding the defense of marriage. It was upholding the right to marry or something like that. Basically allowed same-sex couples to marry in Washington State.
Welcome to the club. New York State did that a year or so ago.
Right. And, you know, Washington State was denying it, basically. And, you know, there are a lot of couples here that were had civil unions or they were domestic partners one way or the other, but they could not get married in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really big deal for people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Article today, I think there was something like 7,000 domestic partnerships that were on record as, you know, domestic partners or civil unions out of like maybe 9,000 couples. And this is from like census data or something like that in the state. So now those 7,000 people can all get married. And so that's a really, really huge deal, especially with things, like you said, with New York and other parts of the country that have embraced this. I think Massachusetts as well.
Well, Massachusetts and I think Maryland had referendums, too, and they both passed as well.
Okay,
it wasn't Massachusetts.
Other states in the East.
I'm wrong. Hold on. Massachusetts already had it. Maine.
Already had it, yeah.
It was Maine and Maryland. And I think Minnesota, there's something about M states, Minnesota kicked out something that would have banned gay marriage. I think they didn't pass that. Not the same as making it legal, but it's basically kicking out something that was going to make it very illegal. Or I'm not exactly sure on that.
Hey, you know, I'm not entirely shocked, but that's a nice direction to go in. And it just seems like people are really, you know, once this issue came into the fray here, like into the political discussion, gave it a couple terms, couple years, and people really have changed their perspective about it entirely. 10 years ago, 20 years ago, you would laugh at the idea that two men or two women would be able to get married. And now that's not unheard of. Men and women, same-sex couples are getting married, and they're having kids, and they're, you know...
Getting divorced, too.
Yeah, and they're regular members of society, you know, just like everyone else. I don't know. It's sort of official now, and... That's just a really positive step. So December 6th is when that's going to be law, and I expect a lot of people will be going to get their marriage licenses and stuff on the 6th of December.
And getting married on the next day, Pearl Harbor Day. So, yeah, there's a certain symmetry, I guess, to that. Wow. So, you know, yeah, you're right, though. This would have been unheard of, and this was the first time ever that popular votes in the United States – have passed something like this. There have been popular votes against it. I think California had one in the past.
Right.
But it just tells me that, yeah, we're changing as a nation. And I even heard the Republicans saying this. They've been especially conciliatory, which I wasn't expecting, after resounding defeats on many key races. They're saying things like, this is not the same country as it was in the past, and we're going to have to adjust to that. Meaning there are more ethnic groups, there are more alternative lifestyles, there are more ways of thinking about things, not just their way. And if they want to remain relevant, they have to change with the times. I've never heard them talk like that.
Yeah, that's amazing, and that's a fact, Jack. I mean, really, the way I look at it, and in my culture, in my family, I have people that that are sort of more like my grandfather was a bit more on the conservative side, of course, and to me, those people that raised me that might be a little bit more conservative, you know, they ask about a lot of things, but they never asked me about the Spanish-speaking kids that I may have gone to school with, or the black kids that I was friends with. But I mean, you know, for crying out loud, do your research. Things have changed, and you know, multiculturalism and diversity and stuff is like, that was the bread and butter of my entire education for like 20 years I was in school. So to have overlooked that and be in complete denial, a la Karl Rove and things like that, is pretty amazing, and shows you how out of touch they are. You know, that's about all the that's as close to gloating as I'm going to get, because it is politics.
Well, let's do some more gloating, because you also have that other referendum that passed in Washington State, and it passed.
Yeah, I'm not done yet.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
Yeah. You've got a lot to
go. Busy thinking about how much more progressive Washington is than California.
It's not too hard to pull that off, but yeah, you're right there.
So we've also passed I-502 out here.
That's a highway?
Initiative 502 is an initiative to legalize the use of marijuana for adults 21 and older, and the state is going to, or the initiative seeks to regulate marijuana as a legal substance for adults to consume, and it will be able, you will be able to buy it at a liquor store. And
liquor stores?
Yeah, and they're seeking to create provisions to protect state workers and allow the state to commodify this drug and tax it. And that's the gist of it. And I got to tell you, it's actually pretty controversial. And the way I stand on it, before I get into details, my position is that, you know, we should go for it, gung-ho, and go back and fix it later. Because this was really well thought out, really well written, and I honestly think that, you know, they have to stop denying the existence of a black market and accept it as something that's pretty normal. And I'm sure we'll get into this in conclusion, but it's the sentiment. Again, same thing with same-sex marriage, but the sentiment is changing. People in the country have wised up, and they understand prohibition and what it's done, you know, as far as racism and you know, socioeconomic disparity, but also the medicinal uses and the industrial uses and other things that hemp is good for, and they just consider, you know, in comparisons like to alcohol, it doesn't even rank. It's not as far as being detrimental to society. So we ought not to continue to fill our jails with people that are, you know, being stopped for basically petty possession and small amounts and things like that. And
right,
for entangles young people.
For a drug that, when you compare it to alcohol, people don't smoke pot and then get violent. They don't smoke pot and then drive into a tree or things like that. It's, you know, it's not the same as alcohol. I mean, you shouldn't do certain things after it, granted, but, you know, the comparison just makes you wonder why they are so vehemently against.
Yeah.
This kind of a thing, and it's a great step to see.
Yeah, and this is a very, very well thought out, well written law. Actually, the woman that championed it is a marijuana defense attorney, I think, at DA. And she's anyway, it's got some provisions for drug driving. So they are going to, along with this, they put provisions in for being able to test people to see if they are under the influence, and they are going to put a number on pot use. And that is about the most contentious part of this. Pretty much there's a lot of support. People believe that this is pushing forward in the right direction as a whole, as insofar as the state earning, you know, tax revenue from it, and, you know, not basically to stop ignoring the fact that this is something that people buy and want, and you know, not just fighting it, you know, like the old drug war, but essentially people are pretty concerned, smokers and people in the you know, medical marijuana patients, all of them, a lot of what I've heard is that people are concerned police are just going to be pulling people over wholesale and that we're giving them more ability to imprison and get people in trouble. And I disagree with that. I think there's no way they can enforce it wholesale. People will have a smoke-in or something.
I just wonder how they're going to measure if somebody is under the influence, because pot stays in your system for months.
That's the concern, is that basically if you smoke and you have anything in your system, you can't drive for weeks, you know, because it's stored in fat. It's the way THC metabolizes is a lot slower. It's stored in your fat, and mm-hmm. you essentially have to burn it off and process it before it's not traceable. And even much longer after, it's still traceable in your hair and other forms of tissue.
So. I don't think it would make sense for them to harass people that had those kinds of amounts in their system. But if something was proven to be a danger at particularly high levels, if they could monitor that or detect that, would that not be a problem?
Yeah, I mean, so I think high levels, definitely, they're going to come up with a number, kind of like BAC. They'll have a number, and it's probably going to take some refining, but they're also going to have field tests. But what I think ultimately long-term, the real test that they're going to be able to use is to tell if someone smoked within, say, a half hour or an hour.
Uh-huh.
I think that is ultimately going to be the metric for this, so that they can put a peg on it, just like they can say, you know, one glass of wine, you know, one beer equals one shot, that whole thing, you know, you can have 2.5 drinks and then you cannot drive. I think they're going to do the same thing, that they're going to be able to say, you must not smoke in any way or ingest cannabis-containing drugs within an hour of operating motor vehicle, and they'll probably come up with like a breath test or some way to swab and find out if you've smoked in that. But I don't know how scientifically you'd measure that. What I do not think is going to work very well is this wholesale blood testing on the side of the road, where anybody who's ever smoked weed ever is then hauled into jail because they're now breaking this new law. And so we're going to have, what, tax revenue, and we're going to fill the jails with people.
No,
yay, it's a big, you know, party for the state.
Yeah, I don't see that.
That's going to work.
I don't see that happening.
Absolutely. If you think...
Yeah. No, I don't see that happening at all. But, you know, right now, there must be a guy in a room someplace who is the guinea pig in all this, basically saying, okay, now smoke and wait for a half hour, and we're going to test you now. And you know, I have to get these numbers from someplace, so maybe there's some kind of a program where people can volunteer to help them reach those numbers.
Well, it's definitely something to watch, and I think the big issue is that it's about safe access, and it's about industrial hemp and the attitudes changing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the people that are, you know, against it because of the driving provisions, I think those people are the same people that they want to continue to fight with police and run the black market and be gangsters. I think the police and those types of people that have flourished in the black market, I think they're basically on the same side. They fight against each other, but it's an endless war. And I think the real intelligent people, families, you know, responsible users, I think that's the stuff that's going to really come to the surface. And the cops and gangsters fighting with each other, they're just, it's age old and it's really tired. And I think people are sick of it. Safe access is key. And that's the real progress. It's almost funny to hear people talking about it and like, oh, I disagree with this. It's all this infighting within the movement against it because, you know, what? Because you're a drug dealer or because you think you're going to get pulled over now all the time.
Right.
It's just laughable to me because that's not the issue. I think we should be unified and move forward with it. But I'm incredibly biased, so.
Well, yes. They basically say that in Washington State, marijuana possession of an ounce or less will become legal on December 6th, again, that magical date, if the measure is not blocked, but setting up a state-run sales operation would take a year. Now, in Colorado, it'll take effect on January 5th, and that measure allows adults to possess up to an ounce of marijuana and 6 marijuana plants,
right,
though public use of the drug and driving while intoxicated are prohibited. So you can't just light up outside, I guess, in front of a playground.
The, another thing is, I mean, there's a lot of kinks that are going to have to be worked out. But another thing is, like, if you look at the, from what I've heard, actually, that technically you can consume marijuana, but you may not, it's something like you may not sell, cultivate, or possess marijuana. Or something, it was some weird, not possess.
Yeah, that's going to be quite a trick.
Or cultivate it.
Uh-huh.
But you can smoke it and possess less than an ounce or something like that. And you can't, I don't know, it's just some silly way. So there's stuff they have to iron out. Because I think the plants, being able to grow your own is worthwhile. There's a lot of people that can't, they have the ability to grow, they may grow their own food, and they can't afford, you know, to go and buy this stuff. So I think provisions to allow plants will probably be some one of the changes that you see maybe in Washington as well.
That's the other thing. A big issue there is, of course, the fact that the federal government doesn't agree with any of this, and they say it's all illegal. So the question is, what happens when Colorado and Washington decide that they're going to allow this? Do the feds come down on them hard? We're going to find out, I guess, and you'll be...
Yeah, well, that's the overarching macro... position with, you know, or reality, is that this is entirely at odds with federal law. So get your libertarian hats on. It's all about states' rights. And honestly, where does the federal government get its power? From us.
Uh-huh. Well, then by that measure, conservatives should be overwhelmingly backing this, because if this is a states' rights issue. And let's see if they actually turn out for that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the amount of local law enforcement, local officials, and local people here far outnumber the amount of feds that could come in and throw some weight. But I could be very wrong. I mean, I'd laugh if the National Guard was called in to deal with pot sale in Washington. I think what you would see if it really came down, if the federal government was really clamping down, is that you'd see people out on the streets and have enormous smoke-ins and things. I think it would get insane. So I think that Washington's just going to chug along, and we're going to start to see some changes nationally by other states following example, and Washington itself sort of paving the way and ironing out some of the difficulties to make this work. You know, we need it. Industrial hemp growing in this country, those kinds of things are good for the economy, good for crop rotation, and that's important.
Well, what else is important? And we only have a couple minutes left, so I would like to get through all the other milestones. But what's important here is that the direction and the way of thinking has changed. I mean, it has been changing, but now we actually see the results.
Yes.
Our attitudes are finally changing. We no longer have to say that we live in this ultra-conservative country where we never get anything done. You know, we still might say that in the end, but at least now it looks like, and this is kind of similar to what I said after Obama got elected the first time, it's not everything we want, but it's a step, and we should rejoice in that and work on the next step and just realize that we'd like to be going faster. Sure, we're impatient, but recognize that this is advancement, and it's significant. And it's really hard in the country of hundreds of millions of people to get everybody to move in the same direction. But, last Tuesday, I saw more of that than I expected to see. Now, some of the other things that came out of this, a record of 20 women are now going to be serving in the U.S. Senate. That's one-fifth. It's still not enough. It's, you know, one-fifth. It should be half at least, right? But still, it's more than has ever been before. A record number of new Asian American and Latino representatives were elected to Congress. You have the first openly gay senator, I think, out of what state was that, Minnesota?
Yeah.
Okay. And I believe you have a transgender member of Congress. Transgender, or I'm not sure. I might have that wrong.
Cool.
But basically, a lot of milestones, they may seem kind of silly. You know, why we care about these things. But they are significant, because when you realize that for so long it's been about sameness, it's been about just, you know, rich white guys running everything. Well, now it's changing. Now other people are going to have a say in the direction that we head in. And I think that's where you're going to see things pick up and really institute some different ways of doing things. And that's always to the benefit of people, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, we say these are little things, but, oh, it's just a little thing like your identity.
Mm-hmm.
Everything you are.
Right, exactly.
Everything you bring to politics. Oh, just a little thing. Yeah, just a little, little minor, little details. Just everything you are, your entire being.
It's you know, to the people that are in control and in power, it's a little thing. Why do you make such a big deal out of it? But yes, Kyle, as you so eloquently say, to the people that are being excluded, it is everything. Yes. And now at last, I think we might make some progress. Call me naive. Call me, silly and overly optimistic. But I like to think that we're going in the right direction for once.
Yeah, well, I don't know about you, but it was everything for me. This is a great election, and I can't believe these two issues. They're both things that I'm interested in and I've followed for a while and have enthusiasm for. I definitely know a lot of different people from different communities, and to see this pass and to see just the change across the country, if it's just a state representative or things like that, it's just really brilliant to see our country flourish and do what it does. And I really felt like people were more talkative after the election because it was so exciting.
Yeah. I didn't realize it right away. But, one of the reasons for that was I was listening to Obama's speech,
right,
huddled up in a sleeping bag, five degrees Celsius inside my house, only a flash eye on the radio to keep me company, and a cat. That's how I ushered in this new era. So, I was kind of distracted a little bit. But after having a few days to think about it, I realized that, this is significant. This is history. And...
Well, it felt great, like, weeks after.
Uh-huh. It's 1 week after. But, yeah, I think it'll feel great for a while. The best thing about it, though, is people are unliking Mitt Romney in droves on Facebook. And if you want to see, if you want to watch it in real time, apparently when you lose an election, people stop liking you. Go to disappearingromney.com, and you can see it all unfold live. Kyle, we are out of time. Finn's going to kill me because I'm going to run into a show. And
never out of time.
Well, that's true, and we have all the time in the world now.
We
hopefully.
Do. For listening to everybody out there.
Yeah, thanks for listening. And if you are listening and you're in the dark, hang in there. And
help is on the way.
Help is on the way. We'll get rid of the floodwaters. We'll get rid of the trees on your house. We're all in it together, and that's the important thing to always keep in mind. OTW@2600.com is our address. Thanks, Kyle, for being here.
Thanks for having me. Anytime, give me a call.
All right.
Reach me.
So let's get it how we live it, why we did what we did. When I lost my city, almost lost my mind. In and out of hotels, feel like I'm doing time. Please, Mr. Officer, don't shoot. Cause I ain't 8 years, I was stuck up on that roof. Ain't trying to make an excuse, but they're running from the truth. We know they blew them levers, man, but we ain't got no proof. Whatever they do, I can't turn my back. I was born righteous, so righteous where I'm at. Send them troops home, let daddy to stand Iraq. And tell FEMA we gon' need more than 10 sacks. Wherever you at, St. Bernard to the Cali, yo. One time, do it big for the narrow. H-Town all the way to the A. We appreciate the love of my people, can't stay. We the men's way.
We made it through the war. We made it through the war.